What if everything you believe about the world is based on a map someone else drew?
In 1914, residents of a remote island, English, French, and German, continued their friendly card games and neighborly dinners for 6 weeks after their nations had plunged into war.
News traveled slowly then, and their reality remained peaceful while the actual world burned.
This haunting image opens one of the most consequential books of the 20th century, one that changed how we understand media, democracy, and the human mind itself.
The insight is deceptively simple, yet profoundly unsettling. We don't respond to reality.
We respond to the pictures of reality inside our heads.
And whoever controls those pictures controls everything.
This gap between the world as it is and the world as we perceive it shapes all human affairs.
Explorers sought the Indies, but stumbled upon America.
Witch hunters diagnosed evil and executed innocent women.
Economic theories collapsed because they contradicted facts on the ground.
We live in what might be called a pseudo-environment, a reconstruction of reality filtered through representations, simplifications, and secondhand reports.
Like travelers needing maps to cross unfamiliar terrain, we need mental maps to navigate complexity.
The problem?
Every map bears someone's fingerprints, marked by their interests and blind spots.
Why do our mental pictures mislead us? Between reality and our minds sits elaborate machinery of distortion. During the Battle of Verdun, French headquarters invented a plausible story about Fort Douaumont's fall, emphasizing German casualties while minimizing French losses. Every institution practices selective disclosure. Beyond deliberate censorship lies a maze of barriers determining what we can know. Your neighbor's salary remains private, while their property sale becomes public record. These elastic boundaries between public and private information create natural limits on understanding power structures. Social barriers compound the problem. We live in grooves, gated communities, professional bubbles, with limited exposure to outside perspectives. Economic factors determine who accesses conferences, subscriptions, and influential networks. Think tanks and media organizations act as gatekeepers, filtering what reaches broader audiences. Most limiting is our scanty attention. Educated people spend just 15 minutes daily reading newspapers. When you have 15 minutes to understand a world requiring lifetimes to master, imagination necessarily fills the gaps.
We don't see and then define. We define first, then see. From experience's chaos, we select what our culture has already defined. Perceiving it informs our society has stereotyped. Experiments reveal that even trained observers reporting staged incidents make significant errors, seeing not what happened, but their stereotype of such events. We cling to stereotypes because they form the fortress of our tradition, the core of our personal universe. Any disturbance feels like an attack on existence itself. Aristotle, facing the uncomfortable fact that Athenian slaves were indistinguishable from citizens, created a perfect stereotype. Some men are slaves by nature. This fiction preceded reason, stamping itself upon evidence. Our repertory of fixed impressions extends to stereotyped villains and enemies. After the mechanical revolution, the stereotype of progress became particularly powerful in America. Americans will endure almost any insult except being called unprogressive. But stereotypes create blind spots. Americans saw cities expand, but not slums, census growth, but not overcrowding, industrial expansion, but not resource depletion. When stereotypes and unavoidable facts finally part company, blind spots move from the periphery to the center of vision.
Public affairs engage us only when transformed into vivid pictures. The most powerful tool is conflict. Politics captivates when framed as a fight or issue, even without genuine disagreement. For distant events to hold attention, we need identification, a chance to participate emotionally in the struggle. Political ideologies follow a predictable pattern.
They begin with recognizable evils, foreign threats, class conflict, corruption, then cross imperceptibly into unverifiable futures. Propagandists start with plausible analysis, but avoid sustained examination, knowing the tedium of real political work destroys interest. No story affects all listeners identically. Each person enters it through unique experiences, reenacting it personally with individual feelings. We present different faces with equals versus superiors, while courting versus possessing, in struggle versus success. Our characters form from our conception of situations. Comedy derives from people imagining inappropriate characters for unfamiliar situations. The professor among promoters, the deacon at a poker game, the intellectual networking. Common ideas emerge despite dramatic individual differences in susceptibility and emotional response. Some react powerfully to abstract concepts like distant suffering, while others remain unmoved by anything beyond immediate experience. Emotions transfer remarkably between different stimuli, enabling political unification through symbols that evoke similar feelings despite wildly different interpretations. Americanism might mean isolationism to one citizen, internationalism to another, yet all feel unified by the term. Wilson's 14 points exemplify this perfectly. Crafted during 1917's moral crisis, they were intentionally flexible, satisfying Allied governments while appealing to popular sentiment. Labor groups found workers' rights, businesses saw commercial protection, nationalists interpreted self-determination. As symbols grow more general, they sacrifice intellectual precision but maintain emotional resonance and unifying power. Leadership hierarchies emerge from necessity. Groups cannot spontaneously generate coherent plans. While masses excel at resistance through strikes and protests, they lack capacity to construct complex systems. Most people, preoccupied with immediate concerns, rely on recognized authorities to interpret distant events. Successful leaders harness symbols, totems, flags, logos, that merge individual differences into collective purpose. Though potentially manipulative, symbols serve necessary functions for social cohesion, particularly when rapid collective action proves essential. Leaders maintain power through strategic favors to key supporters and sophisticated propaganda for the masses. Their advantages include presumed superior information access, control over fact distribution, and institutional authority. Every official becomes, in some degree, a censor, and in some degree, a propagandist. The creation of consent has evolved into an increasingly sophisticated technique grounded in psychological research, a transformation infinitely more significant than any shifting of economic power. Democratic theory assumes voters collectively decide from inherent will, yet invisible governing hierarchies have emerged to represent unseen interests. Courts protect forgotten constituencies, agencies speak for imperceptible factors, and experts gain power by revealing what others cannot see. By making the invisible visible, they create new environments that disturb existing power alignments. The press operates within fundamental constraints. News precision correlates with formal recording systems. Stock exchanges, election returns, vital statistics yield remarkable accuracy. But subjects lacking systematic records, states of mind, intentions, discrimination, become debatable or neglected. News and truth differ. News signals events, while truth reveals hidden facts and sets them in relation, creating a reality picture enabling action. Intelligence systems would simplify governance by revealing currently unmanageable complexity, reducing trial and error while enabling self-criticism and shared collective experience. Educated citizens will increasingly focus on procedural equity rather than judging complex issues directly. Where uncertainty prevails and action requires guesswork, we must cultivate goodwill and reject hatred, intolerance, suspicion, bigotry, secrecy, fear, and lying as poisons to public opinion. Your task isn't mastering every complex issue. That's impossible. Question the pictures in your head. Ask who drew your maps and demand systems making the invisible visible. If you've witnessed moments worth multiplying, hope remains.